Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Welcome back, folks. 504-260-1870. Would love to hear from you. So just a very interesting conversation with Congressman Troy Carter, separate and apart from the obviously, the horrific incident that we were talking about to begin with. More about this leadership position in the House of Representatives. And, you know, we talk a lot about bipartisanship, and it was interesting that we went right to margins and how this was going to ultimately work out. So just full transparency. I have supported Congressman Troy Carter every time that he has run. I consider him a friend. He and I have worked closely together over the years when I was an elected official, and I respect him. I think he's wrong on this issue. I think the country has spoken. The majority of people of this country voted Republican for a Republican to be in the executive department. You know where I stand with Trump. I said long ago that we should put him in the rearview mirror, but the country felt otherwise. They elected him. They reelected him. And in this state, over 60% of the folks voted for a Republican president. And in this state, there's only one statewide elected Democrat. I mean, there's none. There are no statewide elected Democrats. There's only one congressional representative from the Democratic Party. That's Troy Carter. So it seems to me, you know, if all things considered, that when we talk about whether or not someone like Hakeem Jeffries is going to represent the interests of this country in a more favorable way, well, I think the country has spoken. And had it been a different turnout, maybe a lot of that in that context would have made a lot more sense to me, but it actually didn't make a lot of sense to me because a lot of other people tend to and should consider voting a little bit parochially, right? Obviously, it bodes well for the state of Louisiana, whether or not you're a Republican or a Democrat, by having Mike Johnson as the Speaker of the House. I mean, when you think about, from a population standpoint, one of the smaller states in the country, we've always punched above our weight politically inside the Beltway in D.C., and it just seems to me that it would have been easy to break with your own party to vote for Mike Johnson. And obviously, it would have really minimized the impact or effect of Massey saying that he would not vote for Mike Johnson. And the irony there is that the reason he would not vote with Mike Johnson is that Mike Johnson actually has a history of trying to reach a compromise with those on the other side. And they were upset about it. And I forgot about Cleo Fields. It came to my mind, and I couldn't remember Cleo's name, so whoever texted in, thank you. So it's kind of interesting how that is going to work out, right? And it's the same thing that we had when McCarthy went down, and Matt Gaetz led a group of Republicans for the same reason that there was an attempt to try and reach compromise there because of these tight margins and because of the necessity to get some things move through the body, right? Everybody was voting and looking out for the best interests of their own state. I mean, that's how it works inside the Beltway. Whether you agree with it or not, that's how it works. Am I frustrated by it? Absolutely, because I think a lot of what goes on there is all about perpetuating what's going on there, plain and simple. And I just thought for a moment that this would have been a much easier contemplation and vote for this representative and for Cleo Fields to vote on behalf of Mike Johnson. And it would minimize completely those that want to vote against him because he sat down with Democrats. I mean, I think there's a much bigger thing going on here that we need to be mindful of. But I guess it's a great example, and I'm a little mystified of why we even waste any energy talking about bipartisanship. I don't know that it's ever going to be achieved if we can't see past, you know, what's in the best interest of our own constituency here in the state of Louisiana. I mean, we would have never in our wildest dreams thought that we would choreograph two representatives from the state of Louisiana to hold the positions that Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise hold, whether you agree with them politically or not. Never in your wildest dreams would you have choreographed this happening, but it's happened. And as a result of it, Louisiana's the beneficiary. The beneficiary of having strong advocates for things that are in the back. Forget about the pork for a moment. Just to advocate for the big issues that impact our economy. Energy. Think about that. Think about what we've gone through for the last 4 years. I mean, no one's going to get me to believe that Hakeem Jeffries is looking out for the best interests of fossil fuel and energy resources that are produced in this state and all of the byproduct or ancillary support services that go along with that. No one in their wildest dreams is going to get me to believe that Hakeem Jeffries represents that interest of this state. Now, we are at odds with a lot of blue states over this issue, right? Fracking, LNG exportation. Does anybody believe that Hakeem Jeffries is going to be on our side there? I don't. It's a big, big deal for us. So all things considered, I just thought it might have been an easier vote. Love to hear from you, 504-260-187. Let's go to Ken. Ken, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, sir. I don't disagree with what you're saying. In fact, I pretty much agree with it. But my question to you, I'll say how I believe in my heart of hearts and see if you feel that way in your heart of hearts. Do you for a minute believe that Mr. Johnson or Mr. Scalise would vote for a Democratic candidate that was up for speaker under the same circumstances? In my heart of hearts, I say no. Johnson won't even to this day acknowledge that Joe Biden, actually say, yes, Joe Biden did win the 2020 election. He refuses to do so.
Well, I don't know whether he does or he doesn't. I would ask them the same question if, you know, it was the same scenario on the flip side. But I know that it wouldn't be, because I do know that 60% of Louisianans are not voting for a Democrat. It's not happening.
Well,
it may ultimately happen.
I don't disagree with your stance.
8 to 10 years, we may be a minority majority in this state. In fact, I've predicted that it will be. And at that point in time, it'll be a whole different conversation, right? I mean, I just don't see it. Look, you're talking to a Republican right now who's actually endorsed Democrats. So
I know that.
I'm not a hypocrite when it comes to this issue.
I know many people personally who always supported you as sheriff until the time that you endorsed Governor Edwards, who I think was a fantastic governor. But if you're New Norman, he's radical, he's no good. I've heard that line before.
Oh no, look, I've been a defrocked Republican three times. Because there are times And I'm proudly wear the garment, right? I'm actually proud of that. I'm proud of that fact, because there are times where I thought the Republican candidate that we put up was not worthy, was less than. And I firmly believe that, obviously, in
the recent governor's race, when the way the Republican, you know, Louisiana Republican Party decided to behind closed doors endorse Mr. Landry, you made that quite clear.
And it wasn't a knock on Mr. Landry as a candidate. It was a knock on the party and the process that they wanted to dictate to us as individual voters how this was going to actually play out.
Can I ask your thought on one other subject real quick while we have time? We were talking about, like, the rental cars. But, I mean, the pictures I've seen of this truck, there's nothing that indicated that was a rental truck. And if memory serves me right, and you as sheriff would know, wasn't there a point where they stopped kind of putting stickers on rental cars because rental cars were becoming targets of break-ins or something?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, there are pros and cons to a lot of what's been talked about relative to rental cars. You know, So I just, it's going to be interesting to see where this all goes. I just don't believe that we should respond emotionally, that we should take a deep breath, respond, much more measured approach and intellectual way to whatever the challenge may be in the aftermath of this. And
I'll tell you what's in the back of my mind. Remember when, after 9/11, it all came out that the CIA and the FBI weren't talking to each other, and, we supposedly corrected that? I'm wondering, did we really correct that?
I think that there needs to be a regrouping, a redefining, a reengineering of a lot of the federal bureaucracy and the way that they look at certain things in this country, the way that they deal with certain things in this country, and gain a better understanding of the role that we want to play each and every day. And I think we've lost sight of the mission, for example. I'll give you a classic question right now. I'm kind of curious how much we have suffered in the collection of actionable intelligence because we're not back at the office. You know, a good, healthy percentage of federal employees are still at home, working from afar.
Good point.
Where, you know, there are processes and disciplines that beg of communication amongst others, meeting face-to-face with others, developing intelligence action plans and things of that sort. It's not that easy. When you have people all separate and apart from one another, and there's not this collective group effort that it begs of each and every day. Kind of curious where that stands, whether or not that's been an impediment. Some of the law enforcement officials that I talk to, they believe that it is absolutely an impediment to where we are right now, and the lack of
many large corporations are now giving a lot of extra thought to that working from home deal for that very reason, that there's things that is a office community that get noticed and said that aren't happening now.
Yeah. I mean, look, there are some disciplines that it's not important and it's really not necessary. But, you know, I think a lot of what we ask of our federal bureaucracy to engage in that we're not we haven't been willing under the Biden administration to even have this conversation because it's not popular amongst federal employees. And they feel very strongly about keeping federal employees happy. Well, I'm not worried about federal employees being happy. I'm worried about how they can most effectively do their job, quite frankly.
That's true. And as far as security goes, let's face it, it comes down, in my opinion, to a question that's been asked before, but we as the American people have to be willing to sacrifice some of our, quote, personal freedom for our security, just like people that are against facial recognition. Why are you against it? You can look, the government can film me all day long what I'm doing. I don't care because I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Ken, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you,
appreciate
sir.
Appreciate it. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870. Would love to hear from you. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
So we've been having this discussion based on a question that I asked Congressman Troy Carter about support of Mike Johnson as a Speaker of the House, as a Louisiana representative, that we would have the most powerful position in, whether or not there would be any thought on his part or contemplation by him of voting for Mike Johnson. And he and I agreed to disagree and whether or not he thought that Hakeem Jeffries would better represent, you know, the interest of Louisiana. I don't necessarily agree with him because of the individual stances that Hakeem Jeffries has taken on so many issues that are contrary to the best interests of Louisiana on so many different fronts. And the fact that, you know, the majority of people in this country voted for a Republican, not a Democrat. And when we're talking about representing the best interests of the people of the country, well, the people of the country spoke, and Louisianans spoke. Greater than 60% voted Republican as opposed to Democrat, you know, for the leadership position of the president of the United States. And it just seemed to me that this would be a much easier vote for a Louisianian to vote for fellow Louisianian as a Speaker of the House, no matter what the party affiliation may be. And that, you know, we could not have choreographed a situation where we would hold the number one and number two position in the House of Representatives from one of the smallest states in the country. It's kind of thought a little odd, but we would agree to disagree. I respect Troy Carter. I've actually endorsed him every time he's run. We've been friends for a long, long time. Let's go to John. John, you're up. What say you?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, doing fine. I think this is complicated because I'm sure Hakeem Jeffries probably doesn't understand how important fossil fuels are to Louisiana's economy. But I think there's some things he does understand, one of which is that there's 1.5 million people in Louisiana who get health care through the Medicaid expansion and the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP. 1.5 million people. Mike Johnson is not prioritizing how to help them. He's prioritizing how to take that away when they go after the Affordable Care Act. And that's, I just don't understand that. But if you look at the numbers, there's a lot of people in this state who are dependent on the Affordable Care Act. So Hakeem Jeffries understands that. Now,
right, but I think Republicans, their observations are that a lot that was promised by the ACA was never delivered, and it's not the cheapest opportunity for health insurance in this country in many, many states. and you know, which was promised as well. And in fact, the cost of that program has been going up and costing the consumers a lot more money, those that make the choice of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, keep separate, you know, the marketplace aspect and the Medicaid aspect. But every time the Republicans have had a chance to come up with a replacement or what they said would be, they haven't done it. And I have no reason to think this time will be any different. So, you know, it's a complicated situation.
Yeah, fair observation.
That's the way I look at it.
But I mean, you know, I mean, it's a much bigger thing than that. I mean, if you listed the items where Hakeem Jeffries is contrary, his position's contrary to the best interests of Louisianians, how important should that be?
Well, that's a good question. You know, are you talking about the issue we just talked about, or just the fact that there's other issues?
Now, what I'm talking about, if you were to list all of the issues that are out there that are contrary to the best interests of Louisiana, I mean, when you talk about energy, when you talk about a whole number of issues out there, how important should that be?
Well, no one's made that list, but I think with a lot of these, there are more than one side. I don't like the two sides thing, but, you know, energy production is important. We've heard a lot about energy production being impeded. I think a lot of that's been rhetoric. We need the regulations that protect our health and the air and the water and the land. We need those, and we're going to lose a lot of them. The Supreme Court's cleared the way, and this Congress is going to take away, and the Trump administration, they're going to take away a lot of those things. So again, we need to try to cut through everything and see what we're looking at. I think if you look at whether they have actually impeded, you know, Biden and company have actually impeded energy production, I don't think they really have. I mean, it's more oil and gas being produced than ever before in the U.S., but there are rules that have, you know, been enforced, and those rules are going to go away. So we'll see what happens when that, you know, when that's done.
Well, I don't know that the rules are going to go away. I think one of the big complaints has been on federal lands that they've basically restricted oil exploration.
Sure.
There in Anwar, in Alaska as well. They've allowed the leasing to move forward. That's been caught up in court, and a lot of things had to compel the Biden administration to do what they were required to do under the law that they were unwilling to do, and they just sat on their hands and didn't do it. And the oil industry, in spite of the position of the Biden administration, was able to achieve more drilling. It wasn't anything that Biden did to facilitate or assist in that regard, and that's the difference. Is whether or not we're going to have elected folks in very important positions in this country promoting and facilitating the exploration of oil. That doesn't mean that the rules have to go away. That doesn't mean that safety procedures have to go away. And that doesn't mean safety protocols have to go away. In fact, I kind of jokingly say that the oil industry in many respects, and the service industry to the oil industry because of insurance costs and otherwise, are safety companies that drill oil. Now, it doesn't always go well because it is an ultra-hazardous activity, very hazardous activity. And a lot of things have to go right each and every day, and thankfully it does. But that's the difference in the mindset as to whether or not we want to restrict that or, in fact, help promote an otherwise legal activity and a necessary activity in this country, and one that brings about national security and independence economically as we deal with a lot of the world's challenges. And, I mean, I think that is the primary difference here. And for me, those things become very, very important when it becomes such a big issue relative to our economy here. Exportation of LNG, for example. This administration
has supported that. I mean, Biden and company
have been totally opposed to it. In fact, they're trying to restrict it. In fact, this most recent report out of the Department of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, that they released, talked about all kinds of different issues that most economists have said, you're wrong. That's not how this works. But on their way out, they're still trying to make sure that they raise fear in the exportation of LNG, which basically allows a lot of our NATO nations to relieve themselves of the pressure to buy natural gas from Russia. It would seem to me, from a national security standpoint, that would be something that we would be willing to promote. And it's the same thing as it relates to China. It puts us in a much stronger position with our allies in the European theater and in the Asian theater than ever before. But this administration has been totally opposed to that. And in fact, well, two of the totally biggest projects in the history of the state of Louisiana are LNG production facilities. And we shouldn't just, turn a blind eye to that fact. We should be out there promoting it and making sure that this is the path that we're going to go down. And it would seem to me that as a Louisiana elected representative, that this would be an easier vote, a much easier vote for the people of Louisiana. It was funny. I was just looking at a press release by a U.S. senator from New Hampshire. U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen, Democrat, New Hampshire, chair of the U.S. Senate Committee on Small Business Entrepreneurship, issued the following statement. I brought New Hampshire voices to Washington to share their insight on key challenges faced by the Granite State. Yeah, that really, the easiest way for us to do that is to maintain the leadership positions held by Louisiana representatives. John, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Aaron. Aaron, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Sheriff. Thanks for taking my call. I think sometimes, especially in light of major events like this terrorist attack that occurred on Bourbon Street, that sometimes people have to state the obvious, okay? And I think that it is obvious that the New Orleans Police Department has shot itself in the foot for a number of years over DEI hiring. And I think that the federal government, like the FBI, has done the same thing. And I think that was played out in what happened, where you have a police chief who was hired because she's a woman, who did not know that we had these yellow Archer barricades in storage. And as you see, somebody drove up on the curb and foiled their entire plan. And then we have a female FBI agent who is also black, who said it's not a terrorist attack, and they were looking for four other people who don't exist. And, if this is the path that we're going to go down, it is simply a path of self-destruction. And this is part and parcel of the Democrat Party platform, right? That's what Troy Carter represents, DEI, okay, where they want to put unqualified people into jobs because of their race, their gender, their orientation, or some other factor that has nothing to do with their performance. And so, I know some Jefferson Parish officials have been hoodwinked for a number of years and endorsed Troy Carter, but they have done so to their own detriment, because as we see what's being played out, we're not getting the best and the brightest here. When it's a Democrat-run executive, we are getting DEI hires, and as a result, people are getting killed.
Well, Aaron, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. I'm not a big advocate of DEI, not by any stretch of the imagination. I want the most qualified people to be hired, no matter what walk of life they come from, the color of their skin, their gender, whatever other ideology they have. It doesn't matter to me. In the case of the chief, she was by far the most qualified person that applied for that job. And I'll say that with full confidence. I would not consider her to be a DEI hire. The way that that whole thing played out, much to the contrary, was caused by folks making sure that the process was more sacrosanct. And there is no doubt in my mind that she was the most qualified individual. Now, do I agree with the chief on every issue? No, of course not. I mean, I have my own belief system. She has her own belief system. But the fact of the matter is, I think she was the most qualified. I don't think she was a DEI hire. Now, about the Yellow Archer barricades, remember, this chief is relatively new to the job here. I think the onus is really not so much on the chief, but on others. So, for example, you have a guy who sits as the head of the Department of Homeland Security and the like in the city of New Orleans, a former NOPD officer, John Thomas. You know, and the reality is that, you know, what have we heard from him? It would be the obligation of many others within the NOPD, I would think, to come to the forefront to step up. Look, I remember working very closely with others that held that position. For example, Colonel Terry Everett worked very close with him, where I worked very close with Jerry Sneed. I was both the chief deputy and sheriff through those years. And I can promise you those guys knew about those types of barricades, whether they were that Jersey barriers or whatever it may be. They knew what they had access to. They compelled and caused conversations to be had. There's been a lot of institutional knowledge that has been lost under this administration. And, you know, but once again, it's why I talk about bollards in the sense of execution, where, you know, somebody's not stepping up and taking ownership of these challenges that we've had. It's easy to just point the finger. I think it's a little bit more complex than that. And we have a culture within city government, I dare say, where it's hard to achieve success for a whole host of reasons. But I would respectfully disagree. I would agree with you generally that DEI is not working in the best interests of the citizens of this country. Think about airline pilots, for example. I want the best qualified pilot. I don't care. Care what gender they are. I don't care what color they are. I don't care about their belief system. I want the most qualified people flying the plane. I want the most qualified air traffic controllers. I want the most qualified surgeon cutting on me. And I do my homework in that regard when I have some control, but there's so many things I don't have the control. And I think that's what we need to focus on. Who is the most qualified person? I don't believe in looking at statistics and say, oh, well, we're underrepresented in this group and underrepresented in that group and underrepresented here. That's the outcome. So why? Why is that? Do we have the qualified candidates that are representative of all these groups that are actually applying and being denied? And more often than not, when there are studies that look at that, what they find is the answer is no. So we try to create equality through creating these statistical numbers that we need to have so many of this, so many of that, so many of this, so many of that. Now, we need the most qualified people to hold these jobs. And when we have threats and we have responses and we have things that we call upon the bureaucracy in general, we want to make sure that's who shows up. Plain and simple. It becomes a lot easier that way, I think. And we just evaluate it as objectively as possible. And that's not always achievable. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Let's go back to the talk lines. Jeff, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Sheriff. Good afternoon. I just had one quick comment, one quick question, and I'll just hang up and listen to your comments if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sheriff, first thing I wanted to say was the caller who called in about DEI and the police chief. With 40 years of law enforcement experience, I take your word that she was the most qualified. I'll take that a step further, Sheriff. In listening to Rafael Goyeneche on your show, I think she's already proven what she's able to do in the short time she's been here. Look at the stats and look at the changes. I mean, DEI, if Michelle Woodfork would have been put in office, I'd say maybe so, but not no. Ann Kirkpatrick has, in my opinion, from what I've heard, has turned this city around. My question is, I have not looked at any pictures or video of the terrorist attack on New Year's morning. I was just curious to know if all the fatalities and injuries were caused by a motor vehicle collision or if any of those were caused by gunfire. And I'll hang up and listen, Sheriff. Thanks a lot.
We don't have the full picture of that. The information has not been fully released. Some of drips and drabs are out there that there was one individual that was both hit by the vehicle and shot. I think in the coming days, probably next week, we will hear more about that and the nature of the injuries that those that survived, the 35 or so that survived. I think most of the information will be out a little earlier on those that are deceased as to whether or not they were deceased as a result of being run over by the truck and or gunshots. But the information has been a little sketchy and totally understandable during the course of this investigation, and I think we just have to be patient and wait for that information as it gets released. Thank you so much, Jeff, for the call. Michael, you're up next. What say you? Yes, go ahead,
Michael. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
First of all, I want to commend the New Orleans Police Department for running toward the shots and getting the terrorists. But I do have an issue. Matter of fact, I have two. I don't know if I can get to the second one. With your law enforcement experience, maybe you can address this. I'm sure most people have seen that video of all those 10 or 12 policemen gathered around the corner and then running toward the shots. I thought the New Orleans police along Bourbon Street was supposed to be spread out like three to a block. Unless they were on a shift or a lunch break or something, I was just wondering if you can address that or if you've heard anything about that.
Well, I don't. I mean, what I do know about those officers is that there were multiple agencies represented there. It may have been a mustering point. This was at 3:15 in the morning. I would suspect that a number of people were probably getting off at around 3, and they get off in stages throughout the night. So I was not surprised by that. You see that periodically. Obviously, during the earlier hours, I would have been a little bit more distressed about that happenstance. It was always something that was an issue for me when I was a sheriff, making sure that we stayed, at our post where we were designated to be at, and that we didn't have a collective group of people on a particular corner or otherwise. I don't have enough information to really pass judgment on why that was. I was just happy to see that, pursuant to their training and their experience, that when something was obviously happening down the street, they every single one, without hesitation, ran towards that incident. Thank you, Michael, for the call. Let's go to Clyde. Clyde, you're up. What say you?
Hey, good morning, Lou. I've been in the quarter. I've used to work there a long time and even have business down there. And I've been to all the parades and everything, and every time I noticed they always got like five or six police officers at every corner, probably more during the last year or so. And I don't understand how this guy got from the 100 block. The only reason he stopped at the 400 block was because he ran into that crane. How come the officers wasn't engaging them at the intersection? They see this truck coming down the street at high rate speed. I don't understand why they wasn't trying to shoot at him or trying to disable him some kind of way.
Well, you're on a very tight street. It's a very small corridor. You are a street that's commercial in nature in the middle of a residential area. You have a lot of innocent folks that are probably pressing themselves up against the walls of each and every building. You have to make a split-second decision whether or not you are going to attempt to eradicate that threat by shooting at that individual. It's hard to be critical of not taking a shot, in my view, in that situation. And I'm sure that it happened so fast that you had a lot of folks that were trying to get out of the way of the vehicle, to include law enforcement, and I can't be critical of that either, before they take whatever action they were going to take. No doubt that once the vehicle struck that that piece of equipment in the middle of the street and the individual exited the vehicle and was, you know, attempting to take shots and maybe may have even been shooting out of the vehicle at some point in time. We don't know all the facts yet, and I believe that we'll know more next week. It's hard to pass judgment on that. They're engaging in conjecture, and you hear me warn against that all the time. Let's let the details reveal themselves, and let's just be thankful right now for the fact that, and continue to be thankful for the fact that, three NOPD officers engaged and fired shots at that individual and incapacitated that threat. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We will be visiting with Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. We'll talk about the Sugar Bowl game as well as the Saints game, the last Saints game of the season against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if Tampa Bay wins, they go to the playoffs. And we'll also visit with Walt Leger in the back half of the 12 o'clock hour, president and CEO of New Orleans and Company. We'll talk about some updates as to what's going on around the city in the aftermath of the terrorist attack. So stay with us. Got some great guests coming your way. This is Newell on WWL.